A few years ago, Teresa Nolte fell in love. Now, ordinarily, that's a joyous occasion, but there was a problem. That's because she fell in love with an inmate in Monroe Correctional Complex, where she was a staff member at the prison. Now, consensual or not, sexual contact between prison staffers and inmates is illegal. Andrew Mannix covered Nolte's story and the rising number of cases like hers for the Seattle Times. He explained why sexual contact between prison staffers and inmates is illegal, whether or not it's consensual.
When you have a power imbalance between a guard and a inmate, can you consent? One of the people has the power to put the other one in solitary confinement. They have the power over whether or not they get a desirable job. They can even make it so they stay in prison longer by giving them bad reports, by saying they're misbehaving and not getting that good time that can lead to an earlier parole or an earlier release.
Teresa Nolte's story is one of many. The number of complaints for staff sexual misconduct has quadrupled over the past 10 years. How typical is Teresa Nolte's story, a female staff member who has relations with a male inmate?
Well, it's hard to say. The cases really run the gamut. We found also cases of what you would more, I think, typically think of as sexual abuse, you know, forcible rape or coercion. So there's a lot of cases like that. There's also a lot of cases that there isn't any sexual abuse. It's, you know, people are writing sexually explicit letters or people are giving inmates pornographic photos, stuff like that. If you look at national statistics, females are far more frequently the perpetrators of staff sexual misconduct than men are.
Let's talk a little bit more about the data that you uncovered. Do we know why there's been such a sharp increase, a quadrupling in the number of staff sexual misconduct complaints over the last 10 years?
Well, there are a few factors that I think could lead to that. One is there's a federal law passed in 2003 called the Prison Rape Elimination Act. One aspect of this law is that prisons have to uniformly collect a lot more data and report it to the Department of Justice. You know, and another thing that Washington Department of Corrections says, and they acknowledge that the number of allegations they have are pretty high, and they say the reason for that is we've changed our policies to cast a wider net on allegations, you know, things that other prisons might not consider sexual misconduct.
Does that mean that there's been a lot more prosecutions and a lot more convictions for people charged with this?
No, it does not. So Washington started, they didn't have a really good system for tracking their referrals to law enforcement until 2012. So what we did is we got their referrals. And in that time period, there were 553 allegations of staff sexual misconduct in Washington. Zero have so far resulted in a conviction for custodial staff sexual misconduct.
Why do you suppose there are so many reported cases but so few prosecutions and convictions?
When we talked to prosecutors and police about this, they said, you know, we do take this very seriously, but these cases are really, really difficult to prosecute. And if they don't think they can prove it to a jury, then they're not going to take the time to charge it. That's somewhat of a controversial opinion. I mean, there are lawyers who have studied this issue nationally and say, if you don't charge any of these, then it sort of sends a mixed message that, yes, it's illegal, but you don't really get in trouble for it.
Does the lack of convictions and charges in these cases of staff sexual misconduct really reflect that we're thinking about people who are inmates as a different class, a lower class of person?
That's a really difficult question. The Department of Corrections would certainly say no. There are people who we talked to for the story that absolutely said that. You know, they said, you look at a case where a staff member forcibly rapes or uses coercion to perform a sex act unwillingly onto an inmate, and that staff member ends up getting 5 months in jail. If it was the other way around, if the staff member had been raped by the inmate, would that have been the outcome? I think a lot of people would probably say no. So there is definitely a perception from a lot of people that we just don't treat inmates the same way that we treat other members of our community, largely because we think, well, they committed a crime, they're in here for a reason, and they don't deserve the same treatment.
Are there those who have an idea of how staff sexual misconduct in Seattle and Washington State prisons could become an infraction that is more commonly prosecuted and people getting convicted for? What needs to happen?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, like I said, there are experts who think they should be charging these cases, even if they don't think they can prove them, just so, you know, it raises public awareness. People, this is very, very much an invisible epidemic. I mean, one thing that the Prison Rape Elimination Act has done is shown that this issue of prisoners being abused by whether it be staff or other inmates is happening way more than we thought before. And staff does comprise a really large percentage of that. As a lot of people pointed out when we share these statistics with them, these are lockdown facilities. You know, in theory, there shouldn't be a lot going on that people don't know about. There's cameras everywhere. So how this is allowed to occur as frequently as it does is troubling to a lot of people. So it's a difficult question of how to really bring this down to zero.
That's Andrew Mannix, a journalist in Minneapolis. He wrote a special to the Seattle Times about staff sexual misconduct in Washington prisons.